Welcome to the Voyager Podcast, hosted by Chris Vick and Brad Alexander. A show about authentic faith in unlikely places. You can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcast. We hope you're encouraged. Hey, welcome back to the Voyager Podcast. My name is Brad Alexander. I'm here with Chris Vick.
It has been a while.
Yeah.
I was like, are we still doing that thing where we say something funny? But
I don't think we are.
No, we're not.
I can't remember. It's been some months.
Hello. It's good to be back.
And somehow this was funny despite that. So
it worked out.
You know what? We had always said when we got off the weekly, we're going to force ourselves to put out, you know, an episode a week. And it kind of put us in a crunch that we would do the show when we felt like we were fired up to do it. We had something to talk about. We had a guest that we're like, okay, we need to like talk to them. It's going to encourage people. And I know we've been away for a little while, but it's not because we don't love doing the show, because we do. I think it's just been a crazy season. And I keep thinking the season's going to come to an end and things will slow down. And that just hasn't really been how it's gone. But today, I think we're both really excited to talk about what we're going to talk about today. And I think it's one of those things where I message you and I'm like, I really want to talk about this. And I think you kind of just were like, yeah, that's a no-brainer.
It's funny, as far as the show goes, full disclosure, we were talking about like, all right, what do we do? This can't be like our main thing. And within a week, we're like recording another episode. I think it's right? Just because I think we do love it. And it kind of like reminded us of how much we love it. And so obviously we have day jobs and other things to do that are really important, but
which is actually what we're going to talk about today.
Exactly.
In so many words. So I think today's episode, there's many ways you could phrase this. I refer to it as the calling on my life. You could call it like God's purpose, your journey, your career path. However that looks for you, but we're going to kind of dissect some things that I've noticed that whenever I start talking about this subject, that it tends to evoke some emotions in people. And I'm really believing that there may be someone out there that needs the reminder. And to be honest, like I need the reminder. There's times that I start to question like, am I doing the right things? Or like, are things going to work out? And I have to go back to some of the same things we're going to talk about today, that it's like, no, like I was made to do what I'm doing and I've been equipped for it. And I want to get into a lot of that. So I don't want to like go too far in the deep end too quickly, but in the trenches of life and in the storms, it can get really hard to trust that there is a plan for your life. And sometimes it takes someone reminding you. And whenever I have these conversations, there's a reaction. And I've had people remind me of these things too. And I know there's people out there that listen to the show that may be on the fence with how they feel about God. But I'm praying that even if maybe this is your first dabble into some of the Christian theology, that it would be easy to understand where we're coming from and be an encouragement to you. So,
yeah. And theology is not like a crazy word. It's just like a study of God and his purposes and his plans. And I think if we are in fact created in the image of God, which we can talk about some too, then that matters very much as to, and I think it's actually written all over our DNA. I think it's written all over we desire to do stuff that matters. We desire to be called to something greater than ourselves, something that's bigger than just an individual effort, but something that's going to span time, you know? And so I think it's a really worthy topic. And I think it's something that people are really searching for right now, is a place and where to go. And if you don't know what to do, you're liable to be sucked into something that's a lesser calling. That's not going to help you in the long run. And there's lots of examples of that in our world. And we've had examples of it in our own lives. So
I've been a Christian for somewhere around 16 years now. And early on, I always thought like, oh, if I want to serve God, it probably means like serving at the church. And you guys invited me out to youth camp this year to actually talk about this same thing. And what I shared with them is my like understanding of this has changed in time. Is I don't think that God is calling everyone who is a Christian to go work at a church. I think God calls some people to work in that capacity. And I think there's also people that it's like, if I go to a surgeon to operate on my knee, I hope that surgeon really cares about doing the best job they can because they really are passionate about like helping people get back to life and whatnot. If they're just doing it because you can make a lot of money doing it and that's their only motivation, it's like, what if they mail in that surgery because it's like, I'm just another number to a paycheck. The cool thing about what we're going to talk about today is you were called to work at a church and we're going to talk through your journey. And then on the other side, I believe that God's idea for me was always to get into filmmaking and there's reasons I believe that we'll get in. So it's like, I'm kind of doing what I'm doing out in the world a little bit and you're doing what you're doing behind the church walls. But both of us are walking out what we believe God has called us to. And we're both like involved in each other's life. Like, it's not like I'm saying no one should go to church. I'm saying you can still be honoring and serving God and doing what your purpose to do. And that may be within the church walls and it may be outside of the church walls. But either way, I think we're all called to be engaged and to walk out the unique purpose God has for us. And that's kind of what we want to talk through today, more or less.
Yeah. Well, and I think that that kind of comes down to the role of a pastor is to equip the saints for the work of ministry. It's to equip the people to go and do ministry, not to become necessarily more pastors, but the idea is that everywhere you go, that Christians are called to be ambassadors of God. Like if it's subjected to literally only being in the church, that's a really small world that's really being affected, but there's always crossover. And so I think a lot of times you can run into trouble where if your only ministry is inside the walls, that's a problem. If your only ministry is outside the walls, that's a problem too. I think that there has to be crossover. I think that there has to be like a thing where you're ministering out there, but you're very much involved in here. And like, and so you're like training while being trained. You're discipling while being discipled. And same for me, is I need to be involved in the church, obviously as my primary ministry, equipping people to go outside the church, but I also need to go outside the church. I also need to be involved in worlds that are not in these walls. So,
yeah,
you know,
I would say you've done a lot of relationship building, even just in your local coffee shop. There's people at this church because they saw you at the coffee shop, you know,
wearing a big, bold, steadfast shirt,
which is cool, though.
Yeah. Baseball, softball, all of that, that all has an effect. How it's you're just involved in people's lives everywhere you go. You know, I live in the Village. There's people there I run into and I know the owners of a lot of the shops and stuff. And so you get to know them and they know who you are. And especially if you can be an advocate to help them out and love on them practically, it's pretty cool.
So just to throw out, like, I don't ever want to take credit for what God's doing. In fact, even the things we're talking about are things I feel like God has revealed in our journey, but they didn't come from us. So I always want to give credit where it's due. So we're going to reference some verses throughout.
Yep.
And it's not because we're trying to preach. It's because we're trying to build a case of like, this isn't like Chris and Brad are so witty that they, you know, what a hopeful view to have of the world. It's like, no, it ties back to things that were written 2000 years ago and even some stuff that was written way longer ago. So we're going to start out. So there's a verse in Ephesians. It's Ephesians 2:10, and Paul wrote this to the church in Ephesus, and he said, "For we are God's handiwork, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do." And that's kind of like the verse that I feel like ties in everything else we're going to talk about, because what fundamentally sets the Christian faith apart from other religions, when people are like, oh, but there's this and that, is a lot of other religions, you do good works because you're trying to earn favor with God. If I do enough good, I can balance the scales and maybe I'll find out when I die if I did enough that I get let in. The Christian faith is built on the principle that Jesus justified us by what he did. We're forgiven. And then the works God has prepared for us are not us earning our salvation or earning our favor. It's that he wants us to be a part of what he's doing. So there's things he's prepared for us that we get to walk in. And in our obedience, we do things, right? But it's like, it's also like kind of a joy to get to do that. But we're not doing it to earn like, oh, if I do this enough times, if I give to the poor enough times, then I'll be good enough that God lets me in. It's like, no, God already adopted you into his family. But part of being in the family is that he wants to use you to serve others too, and to help others, and to do warfare in this spiritual battleground that we call this world, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's one of my favorite verses. So like the Greek word is poema, whereas poema, workmanship, handiwork, another way of saying it, masterpiece. And so there's this intention to design. There's like an intention to the way it was built, like way we were built and created. And that's part of what we call Imago Dei, image of God. We were created in the image of God to do this, to be a part of this. And I love going through Genesis, and I like to ask people, was work part of the fall? You know, like where did work come in? You know, at the fall when, you know, they took of the fruit and in disobedience and dishonored God. Was that where work started?
Like it's a punishment.
Like it's a punishment. But the truth is, it's actually not. That's not where it started. It says in Genesis 1:26-28, God says, let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Let him have dominion over the fish of the air, fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Then God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves over the earth. So God created man, and he immediately gave him a task. You're going to be fruitful and multiply. You're going to have babies. You're going to fill the earth. And we know there's something good about that. It's wild, right? I mean, mm-hmm. we have kids. And then you're called to rule and subdue, is to take the land and to rule over it in a good, healthy way, and to bring order from chaos, and to bring life, and to do all these beautiful, wonderful things. So we're created, and all of this is before the fall. What do we know about the fall? It's labor got really painful and the ground got really hard.
Yeah.
So like you're still supposed to be doing this, but things have got more complicated. So the idea of being called into works, it's not like a thing where we're stuck in, you know, have to do this. You were made to do this. And we all are looking for that, you know, like that's why little kids want to help out with construction projects with their dad.
Yeah.
They want to be a part of it. They want to do something.
Also, when we hear rule and subdue, we think of like kings ruling and subduing like other nations. And we think of this negative decay, suck all its resources out, rule it with an iron fist. And that's clearly not what God was saying. It's like,
definitely not.
He wants order and he wants management. We were tasked with taking care of the environment, and he was partnering with man to have order over the land.
Yeah.
I like the point you're making, because it's like work is not like a punishment. It can be. I know what that's like. I know what it's like to sit in a cubicle and just be like, man, I'm working to get to Friday. I can't stand being here.
Mm-hmm.
Because I always wanted to have purpose. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with having a corporate job. I feel like forcing yourself into a box that you feel like you're not meant to be in can be really hard if you stay there. So anyway, before we can make a case that God has purposes for your work, I always try and make the case you are here on purpose. And that's where I started with the kids, right? And and I say that out of personal experience, but I also know that there's people out there that can relate to me. So what I told them is, you were created on purpose for a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've heard you say this a lot too, so I'm sure we can break this down, but you're not an accident. And I say that sounds really like cliche, like you're not an accident, you know? But I'm like, the reason I say that, well, first of all, Jeremiah 1:5, God says, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart. Now, he's making a very bold claim there. Before you were even a thing, I knew you. It's like, what? I mean, this is radical.
Mm-hmm.
Is God is saying that the family I was born into, I believe I was meant to be born into. Like, he knew me. He knew personality traits about me. There's things. And that doesn't mean that there aren't things in the course of my life that I would say I wish that hadn't happened or whatever, because we'll get to that, how he tends to, as the master weaver, give beauty for ashes and weave things together. But I believe that there's a lot of personality traits that were a liability to me before I knew God that had become an asset for me as a filmmaking documentary director. And when I look back, I can see how it's all weaved together. But what it all starts with is that God knew me and had plans for me before I was even in a womb. Why does that matter? Well, in my personal case, and I'm sure there's people that can relate, is I went a lot of my life believing I was an accident.
Hmm.
And to some regard, I probably was. It doesn't mean my parents loved me any less, but it's an identity that I absorbed. Is my parents hadn't been together that long. I clearly was not planned. It broke them up. I was a baby when they split up. When I was six, and my dad and my stepmom, who I dearly love, had my brother, Grady, my half-brother, he was planned. And I went a good degree of my life believing that I was the accident son and Grady was the loved one. My brother, when I was around, I think 12 or 13, him and his mom had moved to Ohio and my dad got a job opportunity and he moved to Ohio. Grady came back. My dad came back. Then when I was in high school, my dad got a place with Grady and his mom. So when I think about it in my dad's shoes as a rational adult, I'm like, well, yeah, like I was living in a house with my mom and stepdad. My dad had tried several times to get me to live with him. I never wanted to change school districts. I didn't want to leave my friends. So I get why he had made an effort to keep my little brother close. But as a young kid, what I absorbed is you care about him more.
Mm.
And I'm just this accident that's kind of just here. That was never said to me, that, but that's an identity that I absorbed, right? And what happens when you start approaching life as though I'm this spontaneous accident? The world's reflecting back to me that I'm not enough. I don't know why I'm here. Like, maybe I shouldn't be, yada, yada, yada. Then you're like living on couches or whatever. You start to operate out of that where it's like, well, my life doesn't have value. So if I do drugs or whatever, like, it is what it is. You know, if I almost die drinking on pills, it's like, whatever, you know, just an accident anyway. What changed when I gave my life to God is that I went from feeling like I was an orphan in the world to being adopted into a family. Man, God loves me so much that he spared me of like several overdoses. I never would have called myself an addict. But when I look back, it's like, what would you call that behavior?
Mm-hmm.
If you're almost going to die taking a substance and you're taking that substance again right after, and that continues to be a pattern in your life, you're an addict, man.
You have to go through some mental gymnastics to...
Yeah, it's a self-righteousness, though.
Classify it as something. Oh, absolutely. Mine's different than yours.
Yeah. I don't want to detour from the topic, but the point is, if you operate out of being an accident that's an orphan in the world and whatever, then you're going to get what you're looking for. Is life sucks. I'm going to make the best of a bad situation. I'm going to feel good while I'm here. When you operate out of the stance of, man, God loves me so much that he like chased me down. And I've said some blasphemous stuff and I still had a radical experience with God. That was his plan, not mine. The idea that I would be spared from all that stuff and then the plan would be, okay, God, like, you know, I could have died in my bed several times over after partying too hard. And I didn't, even though some of my friends did, but I'm still here. But there's no plan past that point. And I think you can take that into the rest of your life and you'll have symptoms. And work is one of them. Is if you don't believe that you're called to something unique, that there's a unique plan for your life, then you'll kind of settle for whatever you fall into. And or it becomes about making as much money as you can so you can have the best life you can. And I think both those things fall short of the joy you can have when you start walking out. There's something that engages when you find that thing that you're like, whoa, I think this is like what I'm supposed to be doing.
And it's what you're talking about is identity. If you don't know who you are, then you're liable to have someone else tell you that what you are. And you're going to allow society and culture to tell you what you are. And that's really, really dangerous, especially because none of those things really work. You know, they might like, it's kind of like a Band-Aid to the situation, but they don't cause doesn't get to the real core issue. Because the verse you shared is that you're known and called as a child, or this Ephesians verse, as workmanship, as masterpiece, that there's something really, really special that you've been called to. I really try to do this with my daughters. I try and tell them often how beautiful they are. Do it to my son too, less beautiful, but how special they are and important they are, and how much I love being with them. And it's all true. I believe it with my whole core, but I want them to know they have that from their dad. Ultimately, they're going to have to find it from the Lord, because even what I give, it's going to have limits. I mean, the data shows dads who love their daughters really well, it's a good thing. I know my daughters really well, my son really well, but I don't know them completely. I only know so much still. God knows me and sees me in whole. And he says, I saw you from the beginning and I've called you into something. You're my masterpiece and I have work set out for you. I like using the example of like, you could take your iPhone and you could use it for all kinds of different things. You could use it to try and hammer a nail into wood. You could. It might kind of work. But in the meantime, you'll destroy the iPhone. And what is it really capable of doing? Well, if it's good or bad, that's like, you know, we'll find out. I don't know. But like, it's capable of doing a million things. It's capable. It's unbelievable what it's capable. It's a computer in your hand. But if you relegate it to being a hammer, because that's all that you can fathom in your mind. Like, it's so dumb and whatever. All I could do is hit this nail with it. Not only are you not using its capabilities, but you're actually destroying it in the process. And I think that's so often how we live our lives. We don't have an imagination. Because I think following God is like the greatest, it's the greatest adventure you could possibly have. Because you're connected with the one who created you.
Yeah.
And he has some really crazy twists and turns that he wants to take you on. Why are we so enamored with adventure and stories and all that? Because he made us like that. And he wants us to experience those kind of things in our life. And so not that they always have happy, easy endings, but like that he's going to be involved in all of it and be working in through all of it. So understanding that you're known from the beginning and loved, and then you're called his masterpiece. A masterpiece that has been created for works. There's work set out for you with your own. And we know this. I was just watching football the other day. Football team is full of all kinds of different players, right? Like, you have the linemen are really big and they're good at blocking and they're monsters, right?
Yeah.
They're tall. They're animals. But then you have like these little like receivers or punt returners that are short and super quick. And there's something beautiful about even music when it all sounds the same. We go, oh my gosh, it's just pop. Like, I can't handle it anymore. But when you have someone with a kind of an odd voice, like think of like a Bob Dylan or like a Billy Corgan or something like that, like where you're like, what a weird voice, but you're like, I love it. It's different. You know, there's something about, we crave variance and we crave seeing people doing it all a little different, but with the same goal in mind. And so I think that's what we're called into, which is really cool.
It's cool. Like, nothing goes to waste. So I believe that filmmaking was God's plan for me.
Mm-hmm.
And as I've gotten further into it, I don't think I'm like the best cinematographer that's ever like walked the earth. I don't think I'm like some visionary director, but I think I'm good at what I do because a lot of people, after I interview them for documentaries, have said, you made that easier than I thought it would be. And I think this would have gone different with someone else. Mm-hmm. And it's always because I can empathize with people. I have a certain level of compassion and I give them a safe place to be vulnerable, to let out emotions, even if they're talking about their son's death or their friend's death or their past struggles with addiction. I give them a judgment-free place where we can just talk through that. And they know that I'm not going to put them on blast in the film. I'm not going to put them on Front Street, make them look bad just for like reality TV style. Like, let's create drama. Let's talk about that person so I can put it in there and create tension. You know, it's like, I don't do that. Mm-hmm. I can realize now that a lot of the things I've gone through in life that I would not call good have equipped me, given me the skill sets and given me the right level of compassion and empathy to do what I do now well. So that's one level of it, realizing like, wow, I really think this is what I'm meant to be doing. I had worked on a film for years that got caught up in post-production and some things happened and it wasn't going to come out. And even that, I had tried to get off that project so many times because I was working in the commercial world. And even that, I was never meant to. I was so underqualified. Getting hired at the agency I was at and them giving me like a red camera to go film music videos with my friends and experiment, like, it was such a gift. Then I kept getting roped into working on this film and I kept saying, I'm not the right guy. And it was with Alyssa's aunt and it was on her dad who survived Auschwitz and he had used artifacts from the camp to make like Stars of David out of the barbed wire. And he created this museum to like further education. And I had no idea what I was doing. But because we were in a hard spot back in the day and she had loaned us a little bit of money to, we were downsizing, but I needed a deposit. And it was right before I got hired at the agency. And it's like, our finances were not good. We had a baby, baby Cody at the time. And I was at the end of my rope and I didn't know what I was going to do. And then I get this job at the agency. And then she told me, don't pay the money back. My dad's collection needs a new home. Will you just do some video work on it? And I was like, yeah, no problem. That evolved into the documentary. And there were several times I was like, I don't think I'm the right fit for this. And she kept saying, if not you, then who? I was like, okay. And that taught me how to make a film. But then some things happened outside of my control and that film has never come out. And in my head, I was like, but if I could just get that film out, then it would get into the right festival. It would get a distribution deal. And then someone would come and say, hey, is there something you really want to do? And we'll finance that. That's not how it happened. My friend who financed The Threshing Floor, which is my first film that I produced over, didn't even actually want to watch the cut of Live to Tell. He was like, I think God told me I'm supposed to help you. And then while working on that, I meet this other family and, you know, we shoot and I'm not really sure how it's going to fit in. And it almost went in. And at the end, their son died of fentanyl poisoning, taking his Xanax. And I was like, I don't want to cram your son's story in 2 minutes in another film, but there's something about it that speaks. There's something about it that's relatable. You gave me your time. You let me come film with you 2 months after your son died. So emotional. I'm just going to edit together and I'll give you guys like a little mini doc for the foundation. You can have it for free. You can put it out. And it was like, why don't we update our interview? We've learned a lot in the year since, you know, hey, what if his friends would talk to you? Like, you know, all these LA influencers and his Laguna Beach friends, like, would you want to talk to the friends? And I was like, yeah, it's like, okay, will you just put together a budget? And then I sent it off and I didn't hear anything for a couple of weeks. And I was here on a Sunday morning, service is about to start and I'm getting a phone call and I pick it up and he's like, hey, we secured the money. We think God brought you into our life for a reason. And we want to move forward. We want you to tell our family story. But all of my plans for getting a film funded, all these things all fell apart. But you see in the process of all these things, how God used all of it. And it's like your time here got used for this and that got used for this. Not only is my time with my own addiction, going back to my own family dysfunction, all of this stuff now gets used in a way that I feel like it's God's grace and it's Romans. It's like him working all things together for good. It doesn't mean those things are good, but he's working them together like this master weaver. And now I look at my life and I'm like, I think this was always God's plan for me. I think he dragged me into this film and wouldn't let me off it because he was teaching me how to make a film. A lot of times when storms hit, it's like, I should just stop doing what I'm doing, or I should just, you know, maybe I'd have an easier life if I go over here. And it's like, probably not. The answer is through. Usually it's not back the way you came. So I wanted to talk through your story now, because I feel like this illustrates it well, because you felt called into ministry and that's been a journey. So I want to go back to your days in Redlands and getting engaged to start working in ministry. And I'm hoping that you can take us all the way through not only like becoming like a staff pastor, but also coming back to Carlsbad. And obviously, if it were, you know, once you engage, you get to kick up your feet and everything's easy street. I think your story proves that's not true, but the character building and everything, all the fruit that's come out of this church, I think is because it hasn't been all easy street. So anyway, I'm going to stop talking.
Before I do that, I want to point something out with your story. I got to see this whole thing happen, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
It is clearly God, but there is something about obedience. And I remember when you're trying to get funding for the threshing floor, mm-hmm. and there was a point where, you know, what do I do? That sort of a thing. And then I remember there was a sense where I've got to make this thing so clearly about God rescuing. It can't just be another addiction film where someone gets clean. It's got to, the story needs to be like really told that Jesus is the hero. And that's what we're going to do, which in some sense can make things less marketable in some ways.
Right.
And as soon as you made that decision, this door opened up. And I think there's something about that correlation. We've been reading through a devotional thing for my kids in the morning. And right now we're talking about Abram before he becomes Abraham, and God's establishing him as a nation. And he takes him from Ur and he says, we're going to go to a place you've never been, and I'm going to give you a whole land somewhere. And Abraham believes God. He believes him and he leaves. It's obedience in action. That's the crazy thing is like, you can go on some wild rides, but it's going to take obedience. And sometimes it's going to be kind of wild. When I was at Western, Gary Brashears, who's a professor there, he used the tenets of Abrahamic righteousness. And the first one was trusting God, even when it makes no sense, which is to take all your stuff and to go where he tells you to go just because he told you to go. And then the second one is, he gets to Canaan and God says, yeah, this is going to be it. And Abraham goes and makes an altar in a hostile land of other gods. And the second tenet is trust. And the second one is loyalty. He's loyal to God, even in the land of Baal, loyal to land, even in the other gods' land. He's staking a claim amongst all the pagans around him. It says, this is who I'm honoring. This is who I'm following. Whatever comes my way. And then there's more to it, but I think there's something about obedience. I think that's really the main thing, is just because we think it's sacrifice. Yeah. And it's better to obey than to sacrifice. Is that 1 Samuel or 2 Samuel? It's better to obey. Obedience is greater than sacrifice.
Yeah.
Because we think, oh, I'll do all these things for you, God. It's like, no, you're kind of doing those things for you. And what you're really doing is manipulating. You're saying, I'll do it if I can shape it the way I want to shape it and do it the way I want to do it, you know? And obedience is, you said to do it, I'm going to do it. And I don't know. And so anyway, I think there's part to that.
There's two things I want to highlight in what you just said too. Because I was just talking about this with my wife, Alyssa, who has a business. She makes this really gorgeous art and she works with interior designers.
She's very talented.
Well, thank you. And we have some of it here
in the church. Yes. And she taught our women how to do it.
And it's not necessarily like, I don't know how her business would be, quote unquote, a Christian business. Whereas I'm very open with my faith. No one who follows Wise Old Crow Media has any like question on where Brad Alexander stands on God, right?
But that was a decision too.
That was too.
Yes. Okay.
And see, you've been involved in a lot of this.
Yeah.
Because I purged my portfolio because Wise Old Crow was always meant to be about God, but I was kind of one foot in, one foot out, do some music videos, do this. And the hard part is that I love a lot of those people. My friend Bob and the bands like Fake Figures. I love working with those guys and Cassetta. And I did a short film on my friend Adam, who I dearly love. You've met him. Mm-hmm. We skate together all the time. Mm-hmm. But that was not what Wise Old Crow Media was meant to be about. And I knew when I purged things, it might, you know, I had to have some conversations because I knew it was going to look like, oh, you're trying to wash all that stuff out. And it would be like a bummer. And I think to some degree it was, but people understood like, no, you're trying to walk out your faith. And people have been really supportive about that. But with Alyssa, I'm like, God still has plans for your business. Even if it doesn't mean you're posting Bible verses on your Instagram or talking about your faith, you should be prayerful about it. And a lot of times I think people think that it's like a nice memento or whatever to be like, I'm going to pray about it. When you actually know that God is like, when he gives you discernment on something, if you haven't experienced that, it's a trip. I've had things that I'm so confused about and you're praying about, and all of a sudden you're like, I know with absolute clarity exactly what I'm supposed to do right now. And it's almost like God cuts through all the murkiness. And it's like, sometimes it's not the answer you hoped it was, but you're like, it's very clear right now. And he has this way of, sometimes there's a degree of faith, but when you talk about Abraham leaving, you know, this land where we believe he came from a wealthy family, mm-hmm. and it's like he's going out into the desert because God told him, that sounds crazy. Unless you've had God tell you to do something, you know, without a doubt, you're like, I have absolute clarity. I'm supposed to do this thing. That's what we're talking about. We're not talking about running around emotionally. When God tells you to do something, there's usually no mistaking that it's like God is telling you to do it. And we were just talking about this, not naming names, but even people in our life that are like, hey, texting or whatever, where it's like, hey, I think I'm supposed to do this thing right now. There's something really cool about when God tells you to do something, even when it takes faith, because you're like, I don't necessarily know how it's going to work out. Like Abraham, I'm going to go here because he told me to. I don't know what I'm going to find there in that land. And, you know, and there was some waiting involved too. There's a verse where James is like, you who say you're going to go to such and such town and sell your goods and make a profit, yet you don't even know what's coming tomorrow. He's like, instead, you should say, if God wills it. I don't think he's condemning them for having plans. I don't think plans are a bad thing. I think he's condemning them for leaving God out of the plans and thinking, if I rationalize hard enough, I can determine my own future. And that's kind of like what we see in like the manifesting culture and stuff, is like, if I want it bad enough, it should just happen for me. But I'm on a whole tangent now. I want to get back to your story. I just wanted to point out, we have a limited understanding, but we always think we have the right plan and God should just bless the plan. And it's like that plan usually ends up being more about you than anyone else, if we're being honest.
Yeah, definitely. And it's always, you know, any path you take, like you talked about your, how you got to where you are right now, you'd never plan this out. You would never write it out like this. You'd never think it would go like this. That's a humbling thing, because it not only does it show you like you couldn't see it then, it also tells you probably can't see it now. Like, you don't know what the future is going to bring. But that's a constant reminder that like you need to be connected to the one that has laid out the good works for you, that does know the future, that does know the beginning from the end. Yeah. So I'll tell my story.
Yeah.
And then I have some more thoughts on calling that I think could
we'll
be
close
really
it out with.
Yes. So
Chris is a hardcore kid.
Yeah. Right.
In
right.
Redlands, hardcore kid. Inland Empire.
Also also into athletics, got involved in the church. And it was right after, you know, really making a mistake. You guys have heard the story, if you've listened to old episodes, where I, you know, assaulted an employee, which really sounds worse than it was, but yeah. I ended up getting fired. It broke me. I came desperately to the Lord, and I ended up, really soon after getting involved in ministry, going to Bible college, doing youth ministry, moving out to Carlsbad, which was wild, because Tori and I weren't married yet or engaged. We were just dating, and her dad offered me a position to do the youth, and there really wasn't youth. There was only a couple of kids. Jacob was one of them, Melendez.
Who, oh, no kidding.
Yeah, Jacob was in 9th grade, and his brother Lucas was in 8th, and then there was a couple other kids around, but very few. And so I left a giant youth group in Redlands and came here, and it was like starting from ground zero. Also, there's like the whole adjusting to a new culture. It's very beach, which I love now. I'm more this yeah. than anything, I think, at this point. But I was very proudly Inland Empire kid. but I moved here, was involved in ministry. There's a lot of ups and downs. It was during the financial crisis of like 2007, 2008. I moved here in 2006. So finances went down and I ended up having to get other jobs and, you know, kind of just working, doing whatever I could do to survive. What's interesting is the best witnessing opportunities were just working with people.
Yeah.
And
relationship building.
Yeah. And working hard. I think that was the other thing. When I was at FedEx, when I was 19, I had just gotten saved. I was kind of aimless and like, oh my gosh, I got to load these boxes all day. And God kind of put it in my heart to be the best loader that there was, like just to be a beast and to knock it out. And at one point I had the guy who was the boss. He says, he's the best loader on the dock. And I would train other people and all this and that. And people would ask me if I was a Christian or something. They didn't know what was different. They didn't know what it was. And so there's something about even doing that excellently, which I think is really cool, because we've kind of narrowed down Christianity to church stuff and even
yeah.
you know, a Christian film or, you know, something like that. But like, a lot of the humanitarian efforts, hospitals being built, like there's a reason that there's Christian names on those things. They were seeking to help people no matter what, with the resources they had, and they did it really well. Some of the greatest artists were Christians. Where we think of science and the church being at odds with each other is crazy, because science came from Christians. A lot of these, because they would study hard and they would work hard and they would care a lot. And I think actually bums me out is a lot of times Christians have gotten lazy and we actually don't do a very good job. A lot of Christian music was terrible. Christian films, yeah. terrible. Like just the whole thing, it was like a counterfeit to the world. But I don't think that was something that was present in years past. It was the Christians that were furthering, sending, you know, the needle further and further and further. And I think we've given up a lot of that, much to our detriment. It has not been a good thing. But anyway, so working hard, and you find you're ministering to people because you're in their lives, you're around these different people. Got called up to Orange County. Being there, I learned how to take over a church. I recovered a lot in a lot of ways. I think I was in a kind of a dark spot going up there. I was working through a lot of stuff when people are deconstructing before that became like a thing. I think I was somewhat working through some of that stuff even at that time. Mm. And Lord brought me through. We had a really healthy group around us and it was really good. And then when I was called back down here, I didn't want to jump on it. I think that's a good thing. I think if you want something really, really bad, it's probably like a little scary. I think you should always have a little bit of trepidation. But I was like, I don't know. Can we do that? Is that something I'm supposed to do? Like, it's complicated. And it's also, you know, you're taking in becoming a senior pastor. That's a lot, you know? Am I even capable of doing this? And God, he really confirmed it through a lot of different ways. He just started lining everything up and it started to make sense. And there was good people speaking into my life. And I knew I was supposed to do it. Coming down, as much as I thought it would be complicated, it was more so than that. It was very complicated. And we were dealing with a whole plethora of issues beyond the church, but also the church. And I think the main thing was, is that I, no matter what, I knew I was supposed to do it. So however it panned out,
yeah,
that's God's problem. And I think that's freeing, where you go,
dang,
if this doesn't, like, if you told me to do it, and of course, I'm never going to do it perfect, but I'm trying to do it the best I can with the resources I've been given. And I'm trying not to blow through stop signs. Obviously, we all have blind spots. But if it all blows up, there must be a purpose in that too. I don't know. There was a lot of seasons of that. And God continued to meet us razor thin margins. I mean, like razor thin. He would meet us and he would meet us and he would meet us. And as the time went on, we just saw God clearly wasn't done here. He wanted to do something. And you know, God has put us in a much better position in a lot of ways. We have staff, we have a beautiful church, amazing people. But it was all built in the trenches of kind of like the gnarliness of it. And the reminder of not, you don't own any of this, you know, cause I gotta be honest, like everybody thinks this, you think coming in, especially if you've had experience in like youth ministry or people like when you speak or whatever, you think you're going to do well. And it's not like a super arrogant thing, but it's a little arrogant. If you're being honest, like, cause you think I'll be able to do this. It'll work. You know, I mean, I got energy. I'm ready to go. I feel like people resonate with me and it's very different than you think it would be, but that's a good thing. By the way, people are successful using their charisma. People are successful doing it their own way. There is that element of that happens too. That's scary because if you create it, you have to maintain it. And I think everything that God has done here that's been good, yeah, he's equipped me to become a better pastor over the years. Yes, he's equipped me to become a better leader and whatever, all of those things. But like, it is very clear God did all of this. I have no doubts about that. So whatever happens next, there is a freedom there. There's a responsibility to steward it really well, but there's also the freedom to go, you did this. You're the one that did this. And so I'm okay with that. Like whatever you do with that, I don't know. I know you'll continue to be faithful, whatever that looks like. You know, that's kind of like my story, I guess.
Yeah. No, it's good though. I came to this conclusion recently, but it's like, it's so freeing when you stop trying to validate yourself and be somebody so that your peers can be like, oh, you're somebody now. We have respect and you just operate in what God's asking you to do. It's so much more freeing than when you got to chase around, like trying to be somebody, trying to make yourself somebody. And for me, that was exhausting. And it's like, if this was God's idea, every time a festival doesn't want my film because we mentioned Jesus, I'm like, then we weren't meant to go there. It's mm-hmm. not personal. And every time a church person is like, I don't think it's Christian enough. You know, I'm making films that operate somewhere in the middle. We talk about our faith, but we're gritty and uncomfortable in some regards. And sometimes you feel rejected by both sides. And I just think of Paul and I'm like going to the temple to talk to the Jews. And some people receive and some people are like, let's incite a riot and get this guy out of here. And then he goes to the Greek, right? And some receive and some are like, you just hurt my statue business, bro. Like, let's stone this guy to death. You know, God is using you to reach the people he's reaching, but you're going to be a little bit rejected on both sides. And I feel like that can be a part of the ministry too. But if you know that I'm just doing what God's asking me to do, then the weight of everything else is on him. Just like, I think if I could sum up the Chris Fick call, you want people to know what they believe and why they believe it. It's not about, as far as I can tell, you're not about growing numbers. You're not about having a bigger stage to stand on. It's not about, you know, I want to have the mega church one day. It's about whoever comes in these doors, I want them to actually understand this. And I think that's a really cool thing. But I'm sure there's people out there that would be like, ah, you guys need to do better marketing or you need to do this. And it's like, maybe there's elements where I'm okay with. And some of it's like, no, you just think you can find the formula and force us to participate in the formula. And you see that on both sides, whether it's the church or culture. It's always about God for me. And I know for you. And the beauty of just trusting God when you know he's asked you to do something is every time I think this is getting hard or it's not working out how I thought, maybe I should just bail. I can always go back to, if God told me to do this, then there's some purpose for it and he'll help me figure it out.
I think there's something to being authentic and okay with who you are. And like you said, I'm sure there's people who have told you, you should do this, you should do that. Absolutely. And some of it's true. Like you said, we should put out media, not for the sake of, we're doing it right now, not for the sake of, you know, building our kingdom, but to build the kingdom. Like, so if it's something that serves this, I have it written down on my, like, what I want to do, content to serve people, content to bless people, not to bless or serve ourselves. Colossians 3:23-24. And whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. And we've just been going through 1 Peter every week, and it's talking about like harsh circumstances, suffering, persecution. I don't care. Don't return evil for evil. Love on them, bless them, serve them, submit yourself to them. Why? For God, for his sake, so that when they look at you, they wouldn't have anything evil to say about you because of your conduct, because of the way that you've lived your life. It's going to be really, really hard for them to talk bad about you with any accreditation. And anybody that does say that, everybody else is going to go, wait a minute, that's not who that is. And it might end up becoming a thing where God even uses that for his glory. So you can't shortcut the real thing. That's the main thing, is like you were created, and this is where it has to be your identity, your worth are tied to your work. I also believe that there's specific callings that are, there's no disconnect from the divine and the secular in a sense. Like whatever you do, if you do it well, because I was talking with one of the guys from our church and I was telling him, I was like, yeah, tell him what I was working through and some of the stuff we're thinking about. I said, how's it going for you? He's like, oh, my job's just logistics, not something important like what you do. And I was like, wait a minute. What you're doing is ruling and subduing. You're bringing order. And I see every time I see him, he's reading a leadership book. And he's like, and he's got all these things in his mind where he's trying to become a better leader, to love on his staff better, to serve them better, to lead them better, to become a better. And I'm like, that is gospel, man. That is good. That's good work. And so I love the idea when we hear about calling. The definition of call is ability, affinity, and opportunity. Mm. Like you've been given the ability, like you'd be like, I want to serve the Lord with music, but you're not good at music. That's not your call. You might be able to serve it. You might be able to be like a record producer or like sales or whatever. You might, you know, whatever, do market. I don't know. Call is ability. Do you have the ability? Has God given you a unique ability that's unique to you? Remember, you're his workmanship. He made you exactly how he wants you to be. He doesn't want you to be like the one person sitting next to you that you wish you were like. He doesn't wish you were like that. Ability, affinity, do you love it? Is it something that you like? Is it something you can get into? And then opportunity, is there an opportunity to do it? Has God opened up doors for you to use it for good?
Yeah. I want to add on to, and this may be a response to stuff personally, but I always view things as like, it's not just a means to an end. So like, if you're faithful in the small things, you're entrusted with more, right? Sometimes, like, if I treated everything like my films are going to do something and that's the thing. So how I treat people in the process, like none of that. If I burn people, if I like cut their rate, make them work for dirt cheap and like just say it's ministry, you know, for me, it's like I'm doing more damage.
Which has been the norm.
Yeah.
Which is so gnarly. Anyway.
And I've been in that too, but I'm doing a lot more damage. So for me, it's like relationship building too. And for some of my friends that sometimes listen to this podcast that like, you know, maybe don't know where they're at with God right now, if they made it this far, that's awesome. But I just want to say, like, it's not so much that we're all running around just trying to convert people for like our own ego or something, like, you know, oh, they're always just trying to figure out how to get people to subscribe to their religion or this or that. I feel like I'm like somewhat fundamentally broken inside. It's been that for a very long time. Suffered from depression as long as I can remember. That could be environmental. That could be personality. I don't know. It could be both. And God reclaimed that. So when I see someone in the bondage of addiction, my heart is like, dude, I want to see God free you from that. Like, I know what it's like to have to self-sedate myself all the time, even if it's almost killing me because I can't do life sober. And now I know what it's like for 15 or 16 years to not have to do that. I want to see people freed from that. You feel suicidal all the time? I know what that's like. It's not about converting people for me. It's about, I know what it's like when God engages you. I know what it's like when God starts breaking chains off you. And I know the joy that comes from that, even if there's hardship too. I've seen how people can navigate hardship with God. It looks a lot better than without. I want that for people. It's not some weird ego thing where it's like, oh, I'm doing these sneaky little addiction films that kind of like talk about God too, because I just want to convert people. No, it's because I believe God can free people from addictions. Chris doesn't pastor a church because he's just like, I want to walk on a stage and hear myself talk every week. It's like, the Bible changed my life. God changed my life. I want people to understand this. there's a lot of misconceptions. You can watch a TikTok video that could sell you a whole, take you on a wild ride. None of it's actually true, but it's like, there's historical context to this. There's scholars that have been studying this for centuries. Like, you went to school and you got your master's and you're considering your PhD, as far as I know.
Doctor of ministry. Okay. We'll see.
So,
we'll see.
but why are you doing that? Because you really want to know this. Why do you really want to know this? So you could be like, man, I'm so smart. I have like these degrees. No, so that you can use that to help other people understand it better too. It's a beautiful thing. It's about, I want people set free, dude.
Well, you're motivated by love. And I think that this really all aligns with the call that we were just talking about. Ability. One, you have an ability to speak into people's lives that are going through that. Why? Because you've gone through it.
Yeah.
You have also have the ability to do it with film because you've been trained and you have you have this ability to tell stories well.
And I love it.
Well, and that's the affinity.
Yeah.
So you have an affinity for one, people. Like, it's done for people. You're not doing it just to prop yourself up or to make $1 million. I know that about you. It's affinity. It's about people. One, for people, or a love for people, and then a love for making films. That's a good thing too. And then opportunity. You've been given opportunities. God has opened doors. So you're wondering, do I have a call to this? Yeah, you do.
Is work supposed to be enjoyable, right? Some people are like, you're not meant to enjoy work. You know, it's like, that's true. Not everything's going to be fun. I don't enjoy writing treatments. Like, you know what I mean?
Right.
The film proposal, and I've got to write like a 10-page, what feels like an essay about the synopsis and how I'm going to approach it and the topics I'm going to play with so that I can show people the vision. That's not fun for me. But when I'm running around in the trenches with the camera, I've said it so many times. You can ask my second shooter, Curtis, who's on everything with me. I'm like, I feel alive. The engagement and fulfillment that comes with that is just like, it's so awesome, you know? Okay, so this is out of 1 Corinthians, it's 9:16. For if I preach the gospel, I have no reason to boast because I'm compelled to preach. And woe to me if I could not preach the gospel. Mm. Paul's like, dude, I can't even take credit for it. I don't know what else I would do. Like, I'm compelled to do it. I love it. You know, when COVID hit, the pandemic, and all of California shut down as far as video production is concerned, non-essential jobs. So it's like, we're all in pandemic relief. No one can do anything. You know what I was doing? You do know, because I did one on you.
Mm-hmm.
I was running around doing testimony videos on my friends because I was like, "What? I'm compelled."
Mm-hmm.
Most of my friends who were not getting paid to pick up their camera did not pick up their camera. And I'm not trying to say anything about them. I'm saying I could not do it, even though I'm like, I could sit on the couch and be on pandemic relief, or I can use this time to run around and like try and light things better and do testimony films. And maybe that'll speak to someone. So that's what I did.
I also think you doing that was what brought you to Carlsbad.
That's probably true too.
Which was interesting.
Which has been another great thing.
Here's the thing. I think when you recognize the call, you want to discipline yourself to do the hard work because of what you get out of it on the other side, like because of the gain you get out of it. And I'm trying to teach my son this right now. He's really into baseball. He shows skill. And I said, you got to learn to love work. You got to learn to love working out and running and sprinting and the grind. And you know, we've been talking about the disciplines of waking up and spending time with the Lord first and foremost and filling up with him. You know, so let's set a schedule. And then when you're in doing school, you crush it. You crush school. You kill it. You do it super well because that's going to have an effect. So everything you're doing it really well. You're not mailing any of it in. And before you touch a video game, you work out really hard. Like, you go do something where you were working out, you're sweating, you're furthering, and learn to love the disciplines and the process. And it will lead to, when you get on the field, freedom. So go swing your bat, go do all your stuff, go do your bands exercises and all your little things. And then after all that's done, you go forward and learn to love that part of it, because that's the discipline part that leads to, when the time comes, you're already equipped to go do the stuff. So I think a lot of times people think, well, if I'm called to it, it should be easy. That's not true. That's not true. And how much are you in the editing bay? Oh my gosh. How many times have you redone your film?
Yeah.
I mean, but just know what I'm saying. Like, there's a lot of like stuff that other people, if you don't love it and you don't have a desire and a passion for it and a work ethic for it, you're going to mail it in. And I think the world doesn't need the church to do that anymore. Whether we're doing it in the secular or in the church setting, we've got to like do everything heartily as unto the Lord for him.
We all have dark nights where like, you're like,
Oh, yeah.
Is any of this going to go right? And it like, as many times as he carries you through it, you still have those. So I need this reminder as much as anyone. And I just hope if there's anyone out there that just feels like aimless or, you know, I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do in life. Sometimes just serving at the church or getting involved or apprenticing with someone or interning can engage something you never knew. And then one road leads to another, leads to another, leads to another. And you wake up one day and you're like, I can't even believe that this is what I get to do. And look at all these like, you know, things God aligned to make it happen. That's been my story. That's been your story. And I know we're not unique or we're not like God's favorites because he doesn't show favoritism. It's like he loves people. And I think he has plans and purposes, and you can choose to kind of surrender over that and be like, man, I want to do whatever God wants me to do. And you realize you find so much fulfillment, just purpose in that, or you can kind of try and do it on your own and, you know, and whatever. But I just want to encourage people out there. It's like trying to make money and it's hard to get by and I'm not sure what to do. And I'm like, there is no formula. And if you chase money, it always seems to disappear. So my encouragement to you is to start praying and seeking God and ask God where he would direct you. And it's funny how an opportunity might come out of that or clarity might come out of that, but that's always the last place you want to go. We treat it like I got no other options. Maybe I'll pray about it. Maybe God will do something. And it's like, I want to like treat that as the first stop. God, where do you want to direct this? Where do you want to direct me? So that's my encouragement to people out there. You know, some of these templates and formulas are set up because they work. I'm not saying don't use, you know, wisdom and don't do things. You don't have to reinvent the wheel all the time. But I guess my thing would be to trust God and go where he leads you. And it'll be an adventure.
I also like, last thing I'll say on this is I think it's important that you do, like we said at the very beginning, the job of the pastor, the pastoral staff, is to equip the saints. So I think it's really important that you're involved in a church setting. Talking to a friend of mine who just got his master's in counseling, and he was saying the importance of working through stuff in community, the importance of multiple voices. So a lot of times people feel like they sense a calling, and then they separate it from the church, and it becomes their own thing. I think the church should be a hub where we come together and we build each other up and we encourage each other and remind each other of what we're all about, filter through things and work through stuff, and then you go out and do it. But I think that it's really important to find a good church where you can have those conversations, because even like we've had conversations about all these things.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the important things, is because you know what? Sometimes I'm going to be lied to and I'm going to believe it. I need people to talk to me and I need them to remind me of things. Sometimes you're going to believe things that are lies or not true or something because you're too close or emotionally involved or whatever it might be. And you start getting discouraged and going downhill or whatever. I think that it's meant to be worked out in community, and that community is meant to be the church. Whether you're doing a ministry in the church or not, I think it needs to be cultivated in the church. It's the body of Christ that comes together to edify, build up with gifts that are meant to do that in each other's lives. This is the way it was meant to be. And even that in and of itself is obedience.
Yeah.
Do you agree?
Amen. Yes. I feel like everything I had to say, I've gotten out. So
same.
It's been an encouragement, and I hope people are encouraged by it. So
yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for everyone who still listens to the show, even though some months go by at times,
the but faithful. No,
hey, just know that we love doing it, and we love when people message about episodes, and we love that people have gotten things out of it and out of the guests and out of our conversations, and we plan to keep doing it. So even if it's not all the time, I hope it's still a blessing to people.
Yeah.
So we'll catch you in the next one.
Yep.
All right.
See ya.
Thanks for tuning into the Voyager Podcast. If you'd like to reach out, you can reach us through Instagram @The Voyager Podcast. We hope this has been encouraging for you. Until next time.